Hilliard Lyons is proud to become a part of Baird, a trusted financial services firm that shares our commitment to the community. I'm Jeff Main, branch manager with Hilliard Lyons. You can learn more about Baird and our new partnership at HilliardToBaird.com.
But now it's time to get to the heavy lifting. Budgets, budgets, and more budgets. We talked to Mayor Hamilton on Tuesday afternoon after night number one. We knew fire and police were going on Tuesday night, and then an array of more departments last night as well. Catch us up on the process for those of us who haven't been following it maybe as closely as we need to. That would be me.
Well, that's right. This is the budget presentation week for the city. That includes the City of Bloomington Utilities, which will also present their budget tonight. They'll be first up this evening. This is the last of four nights of budget hearings, and this is only for the council to hear presentations from our department heads, proposals for their 2021 budget. It is not a vote that they take that is anything more than a straw vote, which kind of gives us some indication of their leanings at this point. We have 5 weeks after this for any changes to the budget if they need to be made before the official first appropriation ordinance goes forward on September 30th to the city council. And then there'll be a discussion that night followed by one final city council meeting on October 14th where they'll have to make their final vote. So this is a very elongated process for the city departments and the administration. It's really about a 6 month process for us. We start back in February and March, beginning to look at our goals and establishing what those are and taking a look at how we did the previous year and using those metrics to drive any changes we might want to make. And then eventually plug in the numbers, the requests from each of the budgets, make those difficult decisions about where we have to make cuts. And obviously this year is one of those years where we know our revenue streams are going to be changing in future years. Some have already changed, gas tax being one of those. And revenue from the Parks Department's programs and services, some of which can't be delivered safely, so they haven't been held. So all that leads to these four nights of budget presentations, which allow for a great deal of public input, which we welcome and have had plenty of. We have a lot of participants in the last three nights of hearings. We expect a good number of participants tonight, the final night. Tonight's lineup is utilities first, followed by planning and transportation, then our new engineering department, which is a proposed department for us, taking them and separating them from planning. And then we go through the various seven divisions of the Public Works Department, and that caps off our budget week. And then we wait for questions in writing from the council, which we anticipate we'll have sometime next week. In past years, if that's any indication, we should get somewhere between 70 and 100 questions from our council members. And we have about 2 weeks to answer those. And again, any modifications to the budget that might be interesting to do based on feedback we get from the public and the council would happen in these next 5 weeks before that September 30th date.
Mick, in the paper today, one of the points in the headline was that the council held off on the BPD budget approval. You just pointed out that the approvals haven't even happened yet. I watched that meeting, and at the end, they abstained on saying something that night. So can you explain what really happened?
Well, I think that's a good point, Keith. That's the only budget of the ones that have been presented so far that had anything less than a strong support for the proposals at hand. Again, straw votes. They're not commitments by the council. They're just giving us their preliminary indications. On the police vote, I think that just, you know, there was over 225 people in the Zoom meeting that night.
Correct.
The public commenters was somewhere in the 70 plus range. And I think the council and our administration are just being thoughtful and wanted to listen to more. And there are probably more questions about some items that need to be addressed before council members wanted to take a vote. We obviously are suggesting some change in the police department to repurposing five of the sworn officer positions for creating positions or additional growth in the social worker program, going from one to three social workers, in the neighborhood resource specialist program, going from two to four, and adding another data analyst. And that's in lieu of hiring five additional officers. So that's probably the biggest change that brings up the question about the sizing, staffing level, and how we want policing to be in Bloomington. So I believe the council asked a lot of questions along those lines and got a lot of feedback from the public on both sides of what our police department should look like in the future. And that's why I believe you saw the abstentions.
Right.
Now, Mick, what's the timeline on everything getting passed? We know that is this something that will take 2 weeks, 2 days? What are we looking at to get all these, when you talk about a straw vote, when you have the real vote, that's when the rubber meets the road.
Yeah, that's those two official dates where we hear the budget as an appropriation ordinance, and that's September 30th and October 14th. So we'll be in the interim answering those council questions, questions from the public, and then deciding if any changes are needed based on the interest of approving the budget as presented or modifications that might need to be made after these hearings.
Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. He joins us every Thursday afternoon just after 4:05. So these 4 days this week, that's the meat and potatoes of it. Then you'll have all the questions that'll be answered, and then the final vote, as he mentioned, the 30th and October 14th will be the next 2 weeks. Go ahead, buddy.
Probably important to say for those of you who have not been paying attention to budget week, and if you are still interested, all these meetings are taped. They've been Zoomed.
Archived.
They're archived on CATS and also on the city's website. And all the presentations are also available there, as are all the budget, both PowerPoint presentations that the department heads have been doing every night and the actual documents that build the budgets up, so you can dig in all you wish if you're so inclined to look at the $166 million of proposed expenses in the 17 departments of the city.
Mick, one of the questions that I have, because, I'm on the school board, we deal with the budget, we have to publish a rate. And if we do that wrong, we cannot we can't correct it after the fact. Does the city have to publish a number at some point, and you can always go down, but you can't raise it?
That's exactly right, Keith. It's the same process as you have on the school board that the city has. There's a max rate that you cannot exceed, and then there's what you actually pass after you go through the process that we've outlined here. So I trust our controller, who's been our city controller two times in his tenure, once way back in the 90s with me, and then again the last 5 years with Mayor Hamilton. And so I'm quite confident we've done all the necessary posting and legal part of that. I couldn't tell you what the actual rate is, again, knowing that that's just the maximum it could be. I don't believe we typically go to the maximum levels in our scenarios.
All right, I'm going to change direction here a little bit. There's a lot of stuff going on, and you got school starting with IU on Monday, and there's been a couple of situations already in the city. We've seen it all over the country. Purdue's taken an action, Notre Dame, University of North Carolina, Michigan, all kinds of things going on. What's the city's policy position? Where are you on anything that gets out of hand?
Well, look, we're deeply concerned about the last week and this week and future weeks as classes start, with the potential for an outbreak like has happened in those other university communities that you've indicated, Keith. And I can't say I'm surprised that some of this is happening in other places, and very well could here. I think we have great collaboration between the University Police Department, our police department, the County Health Department, and the county and the city. And we've talked to you, and you had them on your shows, the mayor and others, that have talked about this for weeks on end. And we all were preparing for the return of our students. And we, of course, look forward to that. It's part of what makes Bloomington Bloomington. And having half your population come back is welcomed. But with this year, a little bit of trepidation, because it's not the same conditions that they would normally come back to. And the social gathering that would be a normal part of college life is one that has to be curtailed, or at least more safely considered by our residents that are coming back to us again at this time of year. So we've already seen large gatherings and no social distancing and face masks. We report those things right away when we hear about them to IUPD, who's been very helpful in helping us manage the student population around the campus borders where they live off campus. And of course, our own staff and those of County Health, but we just don't have enough people to watch for all that. So we need our residents to point out if they see some challenges, violations that are going on, we'll be responsive. The university has a very strict policy. In fact, they take the names and contact information and turn it over to the dean of students. And I know the university is serious about this. Again, first and foremost, protecting the health of our residents, which includes students and all of us that live here year round. But also, none of us want to see what happened last spring. None of us want to see a closure of campus again and the negative economic impact that that would have, and just the vibrancy of our community that would be what it was this last 5 months without the students. So I'm hoping that students will pay attention, and all people for that matter, pay attention and don't think we're out of the woods yet on the virus. It can easily spread, and those examples on other college campuses are really all you need to know.
Mick Renheisen's the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. He checks in with us every Thursday just after 4:05. And Mick, the city is kind of doing a interesting investigation of trying to find maybe perhaps where some, I don't want to say outbreak, that's not the right word, but where some areas of COVID are happening through the water system.
Yeah, that's a very innovative, and I want to give credit to the city of Bloomington Utilities engineering staff, who said, hey, we think we can do this here. And when we've read other places that are doing it, it does give us some early indicators, maybe as much as a week before the test results, of potential hotspots. So, you know, to not get too much into the weeds of it, it's, you know, you're sampling water from the wastewater system, and you're doing it in various points where the sewage flow comes to a collection point, and it can identify portions of town. I think we're doing 8 different locations. And if we see, and you can detect the COVID virus in waste, if we see a spike of it somewhere, then we know that maybe one part of town or one area over another where these wastewater treatment flows happen are potential predictors of an outbreak. And so we're going to use that data. We're working with, I think, a Notre Dame scientist and an IU health person to kind of test and monitor and use that as another way of having a way to detect in advance maybe an outbreak and try to get ahead of it.
Anything you can do to prevent the larger numbers from happening, well, that's what we're going to hope for. The mayor meets more than once a week with the group of safety advisors, well, it's the hospital people in the Monroe County emergency management and all that. Are those meetings going to be ratcheted up now that the population has doubled, or is it business as usual there?
Well, let's just say the meetings are one thing. The number of phone calls that happen between the meetings has increased, and rightfully so, understandably so. As soon as we all saw the North Carolina decision that was made earlier in the week, we immediately amped up our conversation with all of the people that we just talked about. And, you know, they were all concerned as well. So, you know, Friday's call tomorrow will be interesting. Is it time for us to consider lowering the number of people in a gathering? I think the answer is probably yes. 50 is probably too many. We can see evidence of that every day on these social gatherings that are happening in beautiful weather outside right before the first week of classes. Normally, kind of a welcome thing to see, not this year, a very disturbing thing to see. So yes, many conversations have been had, and I don't know where we'll land tomorrow because that decision's made by the county health folks, but I think it may be time to consider less people gathering just to try to mitigate or minimize the potential spread. With the number of people we've seen gathering, it's a grave concern.
And that's a tough one, Mick, because we're trying to find this balance between parklets and closing streets to try and give the restaurants and other businesses a way to keep going, but you don't want a lot of people together. I guess outside is better than inside, right? If we're gonna break it down to that finer level,
outside's better than inside. That's the concept of the parklets and the street. Providing food service on the sidewalks and in the streets where we've closed off parts of Kirkwood for that. But even then, people are, you know, if you're not eating or drinking at your table, you're distanced from others and you wear a mask when you're not doing so. I don't think that's the behavior that we're seeing at some of the social gatherings that have popped up in recent days. And
from my sources inside the late night hours, everybody has a mask. They're just not wearing them.
Yeah, and you can see all the kind of spoofs on your social media that you choose to look at about, you know, the various types of wearing the chin guard and the, you know, thing over your ears or over your head. None of those are really helpful, right? They got to be over your nose.
Yeah, or in your pocket. They don't work in your pocket. So when you leave the party to put the put the face mask on to jump in the car to go home, well, it's a good – so they will wear them at some points. It's just not all points. But we know COVID is here, and Monroe County's numbers. Have you been pleased with where we have been? We know we slowed everything down when the governor slowed everything down. We went even slower than the state. Has the administration been pleased in general how we've been trending over the last few weeks?
I would say the answer is yes to that. I think in general, yes. The big wild card was 40,000 folks coming back, doubling the size of our community. And what will they do to acclimate to what our residents have grown accustomed to? Will they, when they're amongst their peers, behave like they would if they were still at home? And I think there's some that have, and that's great. And maybe it's way more than the ones that aren't, but the ones that aren't, it's a troubling trend. And that's what concerns us, because the outbreak, look, the numbers that we have are in the 800 or something positive tests and 34 deaths. All those are terrible things, but they could be far worse. If those numbers double in the next 2 weeks because of an outbreak, that is a game changer. I mean, it's taken us 5 months to get to those numbers. If they all of a sudden dramatically increase because of an outbreak, because 40,000 people came back and could be the spreaders if they don't behave well, that's a game changer.
Are you looking more at the hospitalization numbers? Are you looking at the 7-day positivity rate? I know it's probably a combination of all, just like the governor has asked, but is there one of those that is going to signify something out of control quicker than others?
I'm a little bit out of my area that
mine too
spent a lot of time on. However, I would say that all of those are important, but certainly the infectious rate and the hospitalization rate are the ones that I know the health professionals particularly get concerned about. The hospitalization rate means that we have a limited capacity, and if that capacity gets filled faster or it can't keep up, we have to start moving people. We've already seen evidence of some people being moved in anticipation of a potential outbreak. That's when the system gets overtaxed, and that's when we have severe problems. So I know that's probably the biggest one, but the infectious rate's another important one. That starts to creep up beyond where we are now or dramatically increase. That's another big red flag.
All right. We're pretty well versed in COVID. Now we just sit back and wait to see how that 45,000 person wave hits the shore, doesn't hit the shore, whatever it is. Your parking garage, plenty of activity at the corner of 4th and Walnut this afternoon when we came in. So that's busy beavers working down there.
Yeah, and I think, some people have asked questions, or council did the other night, are you sure you're going to need parking garages coming out of this? And I think the answer is, you know, no matter what, we will, whenever that coming out of COVID is. Let's also remember that some of the things that council just took an action last week to in 2021, eliminate 113 parking spaces along the 7th Street corridor to make the B-line, or the 7 line, as it will be called, the B-line connector, happen. So when you take away parking inventory on the streets, the extra capacity we'll have in our garages is the logical place for that to go. So let's not...
Well, and if parklets stick around too, Mick.
Yeah. So the parklets, that's right. So there would be other places that could be repurposed for other uses, like we've seen in these pilot programs this summer, that too could take away parking inventory on the street. Even better, we'll have some spaces in the garages for that. But again, remember, the Trades District garage was created to attract employment centers and to offer a development in the Trades District, and the 4th Street replacement was to build a bigger footprint to accommodate the downtown and a potential future convention center expansion. But basically, we knew that our garage downtown was at capacity and was not even accommodating the current demand for it. That was, of course, pre-COVID. Let's all hope we all get back to, after COVID, we return to some normalcy in terms of economic activity, and that comes sooner than later. And then those garages will be really critical for that purpose.
And speaking about the parklets, we can see one from our vantage point. Looks like in front of La Una Cantina, well, at least on the, what would that be, the east side of 7th Street. And did you put in any official extensions to this? Are we just going to do it as long as we feel like it? Did the council have to act doing all that, or are they too worried about budget stuff?
So all of the parklets and the street dining has been allowed by a process in the city code that allows staff to do 90 to 100 in a day, 180 day orders. And so the September 30th conclusion of that phase fits within that window. And so everyone's evaluating how it's going now. And we're listening to the Kirkwood merchants and the other merchants in the area that are experiencing the pickup drop-off zones and the parklets and the outdoor dining. And we'll expect their feedback to inform us whether or not to extend that September 30th beyond, or whether to codify these changes for a more permanent purpose. But at the moment, we still have plenty of time. September 30th is the first trigger point for any additional action that might need to be taken.
All right, Mick, we probably better get to the trivia here. We've put it off as long as possible. I don't want our Zoom to expire. And
we did have that happen last week at the very end.
We did. That's all right, though. That means we were busy and had good content. And Celeste always brings us to our knees and humiliates us in front of the entire listening public.
I think she's trying to be a little more to you guys this week. This is a trivia about one of our new employees at the city, Jane Coopersmith, who some of you may know as the proprietor of the Bloomington Hopscotch Coffee entity. Jane's our current City Economic and Sustainable Development Department Small Business Assistant Director. So she's involved in a lot of these programs we just were talking about. So Jane offers these comments through Celeste for your trivia questions for the day. What part of the coffee plant are coffee beans? Is it the fruit, the seed, the stem, or the flower?
I'm going for fruit.
Fruit, the stem, the seed, or the flower? Well, I'll say this. I'll say seed then if he says fruit.
It is seed. Seed is the
thought of it
the
like a bean.
Yeah,
like a That's green bean. You pop it open and boom, and there's the bean.
Well, logic never works in any of these.
Brew it.
Good logical process there, Glass.
What's it? You got to paint the picture, Mick. It's just I don't have Wikipedia right in front of me, but I'm not using that. That's boring.
But to give Keith a little bit credit, I'll give you this additional answer to the unroasted coffee beans reside within the fruit of the plant, also known as the coffee's cherry.
So we're all right.
Well, that was comforting, Mick. Thank you for that.
Right. Yeah. Partial credit. You know how partial credit counts for like nothing. Well, I'm trying to give him a little bit.
There you go.
So you weren't completely wrong, Keith. You were just kind of wrong.
The direct answer was the correct one was a seed.
Okay.
All right. Where is the cultivation of coffee thought to have originated? Which is it? Seattle, Guatemala, Ethiopia, or Indonesia?
It's Ethiopia. Africa's been around for a long time.
Yeah. And Guatemala grabs me, except that for the reason you just said, the long time, but I'll go with Guatemala.
We didn't get over here till 14 something.
Juan is getting the coffee down from the mountaintop.
There you go, Juan Valdez.
Yeah,
Folger's guy.
It is Ethiopia.
Yeah.
You're getting smart.
Yeah, he is.
I like this Coopersmith lady. She's she's singing songs I know the words to.
And to keep in tune for the final question, Keith, you have been shut out. You have no chance of winning, but you can still save some face.
If
to know the answer to, when did Hopscotch Coffee open in Bloomington? Was it 2010, 2000, 2004, or 2014?
See, this is one of those trick questions because it was probably open somewhere else, and then there it was on the Beeline Trail one day, but it was probably in someone's garage. How these all start, and then they move on. There's probably a hopscotch truck at some point.
Don't reason. That's not how Celeste works.
2000, 2010, 2014, and what was the other one?
2004. So if in chronological order, 2000, 2004, 2010, or 2014.
I'll tell you what it's going to be, Keith. It's going to be 2010 because it's a 10-year anniversary, and that's the only reason they would bring it up.
I was going to go with 10 because 14 is too recent.
Go with the. Well, we can. You can jump on board.
I'll take 10 too.
It is 2014.
Gosh!
Founders Jane Cooper Smith and Jeff Grant opened their first store on the Beeline. Now it supports over 40 employees, the company, over multiple locations.
Outstanding.
There's a good small business story for you.
They serve beer, too. Don't forget that. For those of you who don't like coffee. It's a misleading
What
title.
Part of the coffee bean does the beer come from?
The thirsty part.
You'll have to ask Jane.
You have to go in there and have a beer. See what's going on. Have a Well, I mean, some people at 4 o'clock in the afternoon don't want coffee. They get all jittery.
Yeah.
Oh, nice beer after
work to relax.
You do the coffee
to take care of the effects of the beer.
I'm not going to ride my bike down there to have a couple beers. So that's defeating the entire purpose. Well, good job, Celeste, that we didn't feel completely left out and left field today, which is always
Speak
fun.
Speak for yourself.
Speak for yourself. That's right. Mick, let's see. School starts on Monday. The budget stuff we've covered. What's next on the radar? What's the next big thing we're just waiting for school to start? We usually say, well, there's going to be a football weekend and there's going to be this and that. What's really next?
I wish we had that rhythm. That kind of changes the whole fall season in many ways for a lot of people I know. So I guess on my mind, I would just say that don't forget that there's a survey open on bloomingtonhospitalsite.com that people can go in and give us their responses to how they felt about the first two forum informational sessions we had, including the most recent concepts that were revealed. So you can jump on there, see the information, bloomingtonhospitalsite.com, refresh back to what the forums and the presentations look like, and then take survey number two as we continue to gather input on how to redevelop that site. That's a big project, a multiple year project. Our next forum will be sometime in October. We're targeting potentially October 6th, but I'll certainly let you guys know about that. So that's coming up on my mind. I want to get that out there to make sure people are paying attention. And look, the weather's been great. People have been out and about in the parks, so I hope they're continuing to get some exercise and fresh air, socially distant, of course, and would encourage people to get out and do that. Try to enjoy the seasonality of the weather as it starts to change to the fall.
Is there any fall softball this year?
You know, that's a good question, Keith. I don't think there is. I think those leagues have just been deemed not able to be held because of the social distancing challenges that we face. So I'll report back to make sure that I'm not wrong about that. But boy, at one time you wouldn't imagine Mick Renice not knowing about a softball league.
And yeah.
don't have any idea.
Right, tell Celeste that was Keith's question, not Glass's question. So I don't want any retribution for what's going on here. Great job as always, Mick. We hope you enjoy the weekend. Let's not get too soaked on Saturday. We could use a little bit of rain, but nothing too much. Get out and enjoy it. Please physically distance. Please wear your masks, and we'll get caught up with you next Thursday.
Yeah, budget hearings start tonight at 6. There's a Zoom invite on the City Council, City of Bloomington's webpage. If you want to watch those, you can watch them on Cats or Facebook Live. So hope you tune in.
Anywhere you go, you can get them. Great job, Mick. We appreciate it. Thanks, my friend.
Thanks, Mick.